You are listening to The Tenants on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. To support us, visit patreon.com/ Kyle Dempster Studios. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of The Tenants. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined here by Stark Realm. But this week, we have a special guest. Zynote is over here. You may know him from Twitch and YouTube. He and I even did a live stream show in the past to get on the Bethesda channel. And today, he's here to help Stark and I discuss all things racial changes. The racial passives, as you may have heard, are getting revamped. And we decided we're going to tackle them. We opened with this in our very first episode of the podcast, but now we're bringing you that new information. So, Zynode, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. Thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. And Stark, are you excited to get into this? We've been talking about it in preview for like the last 2 weeks. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. You can tell he's just brimming with excitement.
It happens.
I'm pretty excited, though, so because I know that one of my races is getting a major buff. But before we get to that, Zy, do you want to kind of talk to us a little bit about how, because you have quite a history of making YouTube videos and things like that, discussing changes like this. So do you want to talk a little bit about your methodology, how you go about testing these things?
As far as optimizing from one to another in terms of races?
Yeah, how do you, whenever you see a change like this come through, well, okay, maybe let's take it a step further. When you see a change like this announced, or you know it's coming to the servers in the future, what is the first thing you think of? What is the first thing you actually want to start testing?
Anything like this instantly would affect every single build I would have, because this is across the board. Every single build you have has a race. So essentially, the first thing I do is recreate it, and then see if it has changed and in which way, better or worse, or exactly the same. From there on, I would alter it race by race by race with race change tokens over and over and over for that particular build, and see how each individual passive bonus or reduction or increase or whatever has an effect on it. Then from there, once I've got the results from that, then I'll start making other setups and seeing which ways you can possibly take advantage of certain passives in their new state. And also on the builds themselves. I mean, if one race in particular is performing better than another, then I'll try and close the gap via CPs or gear or anything like that. There's lots of different ways to go around it and try and push each individual one to have its own either style or optimization per setup.
Wow.
So that's some, lots of stuff.
Yeah, that's some legitimate testing you do there. And Stark, you were kind of having a conversation with Zy about this off air a little bit. Some of these things might be challenging for someone to begin testing. Were you talking about how you didn't have a previous copy to compare to? Was that kind of
I don't actually have an end game Argonian or an end game Redguard currently. Mm. So it does make it really hard for me on a couple of these to actually point to them and say, well, there's been significant changes here and I can't test them.
That makes sense. Yeah. So with that, Zy, do you have a character?
Pretty much everything I need. Failing that, I also spend a lot of time on multiple different servers and, of course, on the PTS anyway. So while I'm making builds and everything, the kind of development process of a build before even using it live is to kind of make it how I want it, mm-hmm. make sure everything works. Then I test it on the live to make sure everything is the same, transferring from one to the other. And then I will go out and farm and everything and make it real. So I do get both sides of the coin. I get the PTS and the live, and I've used pretty much all the races all the time anyway for all the different tests. So I'm very familiar with their uses and bonuses and pluses and minuses prior to this, so I can accurately test the changes based on my knowledge anyway.
You were saying you've played on at least six platforms. Is that right? You were saying
six servers, six Xbox, servers, sorry. Both servers. PC both servers, PlayStation both servers, although I main on PS4 EU. And then obviously the PTS as well, which technically seven. But that gets way too many hours. I can't even count that.
Yeah, as I say, how do you find the time in the day to even do this?
It's my job.
It's his job. It really is.
So with that being said, that's some extreme and very, very, very thorough testing here. We're gonna talk you guys through each individual race, but there's one big change here at the very front of it, and that is that we saw a big change for percentage based to flat bonuses. How is that changing the community? Because before, we used to see things like like a certain race would get like 3% bonus to X, Y, and Z, but now it's an actual number. Is that drastically changing how people are kind of theory crafting these builds?
It's not massive in one respect, but then it is quite a big jump in another. because when it comes to stack and percentage bonuses, some races were dramatically overperforming in terms of how large they could get their resource pools up, which basically alienated other races from being optimal for that kind of setup.
Mm.
Whereas now it's a flat amount. You still get the passive bonuses from some of your skills, but it's not quite so heavy kind of that end of the scale. So it is a difference, but it's not game breaking because at the end of the day, now this kind of brings them a little bit closer together. So you have a lot more choices rather than just pick that race, it's the best and that kind of stuff. It doesn't necessarily apply to that anymore in that respect.
There's also a nice opposite effect too. So if you picked a race because you're like, this looks cool currently, right now on live, you know, you pick high elf for a stand build or something like that, your percentage-based modifiers are actually going to be fairly small in comparison.
Yeah.
If you're focusing in sharply on it later. So to an extent, if you play against a race's archetype right now, you get punished. Your racial mm-hmm. bonuses do not apply fully. And this is going to change that so that if you picked a race because you thought it was cool and you're playing through content, you're going to be closer in level to everyone else in regard to the bonuses you're getting. So that's a big bonus or big
bonus
across the board for this. I really like that.
That actually works even like basically you've said on a race that doesn't necessarily use that resource or a class that doesn't use that resource or a build or whatever. But an example of that is if you are, let's say, a tank and you're a high elf and you have 10K magicka flat, that's all you've got, and you get a 10% increase on it. It's not that much. If you have 40K and you get a 10% increase on it, that's massive.
Yeah.
Now, because it's so flat, you would get, say, for example, that 2K on top of your 10, whereas the 10% would have been before much, much less. So it's a really nice alteration. It does allow for those kinds of situations. And choice of race, not necessarily just based on flat passives that you would take advantage of or else. It's a good way of having more options that were already there but weren't necessarily as easy to use. You, like Stark said, that you were punished for them with that percentage base. It wouldn't even count towards your setup in some cases. It would be useless.
See,
but now it's a big difference.
I love this because, again, off air, you and I were talking about how, you know, we're both on Twitch. We're both very open to taking questions from newer players. But one thing we both get a lot of in chat is, help, I want to know what's the best build, what's the best class, what's the best race. And it's, I have a thing, and I'm sure you have a thing, where I go into recording mode, basically, in my head, and I start spitting out this thing, where I'm like, don't worry, you're not playing World of Warcraft, there's not really a best uh-huh. in this game. And this makes me happy to see these changes, because as I've seen people like Dots and such post numbers online, they're looking very flat, and I really love that. The DPS for these different races, I should say, are all lining up. And I think it validates what we've been telling people there even more, that this is such a game that's based on play how you want and learn your class. Actually spend the time learning it and you'll perform better. So we always like to remind people of that on the show because, man, I hate to see someone that comes into the game, they're dead set on playing a Khajiit, but you know, they find out that a Khajiit's not optimal for healing or something like that. And that might ruin their experience. When in truth, we both know that's not true. You know, you can overcome it by just learning. So
yeah.
I like this a lot. I like a lot of these changes. And I thought maybe we could start to dive into some of them. Talk mm-hmm. through and see what's actually coming out of these. Because I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty limited myself. I do a lot of Bretons. And when I say a lot, I mean like a lot. And then I do Imperials. And so anything after that is kind of my unknown space. Stark, you're a big Imperial man too, is that right?
Yeah, actually both of those. I think I've got 7 Bretons right now and then 6 Imperials.
Oh, I never knew we were so alike at heart.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so Zai, you are our wild card here tonight. You're the guy that can advocate for all the other races across Tamriel.
Okay.
So looking into the first batch here, we're looking at High Elves. So High Elves were traditionally pretty much considered the go-to when you were looking at other builds online for doing Magicka DPS. So Stark, you kind of wrote in some of these notes. Do you want to talk about the High Elves?
Yeah, so what's changed is, because it used to be they had a very high flat stand, not flat, sorry, they have very high percentage bonus to their max magicka. I think they got magicka recovery, but I'm not certain of that.
Yeah.
And then they also had an elemental bonus to fire, lightning, and ice. So that's been changed to they've now got a focus of using class abilities. And they'll actually get some resource return after they activate a class ability. They'll get an extra mitigation for 5% from incoming damage when they're channeling or casting an ability with a cast time. And then they've got their elemental damage has been changed to a flat spell damage increase, which is really nice because it cuts down on the complexity here. Before it was, if you're doing one of these three damage types, then you'll get additional damage. And I want to say that was like 5%, something like that. And now it's just going to be a flat, okay, you've got an extra bonus to your spell damage stat, which is going to be easier for players to track and understand. I really like the part, though, where now when you activate a Magicka, well, when you activate a class ability, it'll restore 575 points of resource to the larger resource pool. So if your stam is higher than your Magicka, it'll return to that. This is a little bit like what we saw with the Red Guards previously, and they still have that. But in this case, it's resource agnostic. So if you do build a stam-focused high elf, you're going to be getting that benefit on your stam-based class abilities. I think as a build level, that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, is that kind of new, this idea that activating a class ability will restore something? You mentioned Red Guard, and I've never played one. Is that kind of a new mechanic to add into class, or I'm sorry, to racial structures?
It was unique to the Red Guard before this.
Okay, so they're kind of spreading that out a little bit. Got it. So that sounds like they're still going to be really good for Magicka, but I like that idea of the Magicka return, or Magicka stamina return when you use class. Neat. Argonians, traditionally the go-to tank previously. What was that?
Potion passive.
Yeah. Yeah.
That took a nerf bat to the knees.
Right. So potion passive has been nerfed. Healing receive bonus has been removed. And healing done passive is down to 1%.
No, down by 1%.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misread. Yeah. I misread.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
I apologize. Down by 1%. I mean, that healing receive bonus seems pretty large to me as a healer primarily. I mean, do you guys think that's big or?
Well, the thing is with the Argonians and Renown kind of for being quite hardy in terms of like disease and ability to heal from stuff and all that kind of thing. The heal and receive bonus is for them, not for their group. So the healing done is still very, very strong. The 1% down, yes, but it comes in line with most set bonuses and stuff like that. In fact, healing done is normally 2%, so it's double a set bonus.
Mm. Yeah, it's in line with the healing received bonus usually. Six,
correct,
so it's
yeah.
4%.
It's exactly nice. The same. Yeah. So that isn't a bad thing. That's still fairly strong and does stick to the role of the Argonian being slightly stronger healers than everybody else. Healing received, again, like I said, is for yourself. So any heals you receive from you or other people is what the bonus is for. Whereas instead they've now gone, instead of doing both, like your healing you get and the healing you pump out are both equal, instead it's more you're pushed towards giving heals rather than taking them. So it's not necessarily a bad thing, and it's a small bonus for healing received that you used to get anyway, which you can still plug with your CPs.
Interesting.
It's not necessarily the end of the world. It's actually still a very, very good passive. I'm happy that they've removed the healing received off it, because they did. I'm not going to go too far ahead of you, but they did put it on something else.
Ooh, you're fine.
We did have it, but it's unique to them now.
So they
also, this is also going to split across the next one, but they also moved the, because before it was poison and disease resist. Mm-hmm. And they took poison resist off the Argonians. They took disease resist off the Wood Elves. So
Correct. Those
two no longer have basically the same passive buried in the middle of this and, you know, not giving them unique identities. So now they have specific elements that they're resisting.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The potion passive has been reduced somewhat so that they get less back from using a potion, but it's still quite high.
Yeah.
So I don't think personally that is reduced enough to make a massive difference. I think they're still going to be used a lot for that passive.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, there's a lot of people that are really eager to keep with their Argonian. So, and there was initial fear that this was kind of going to remove them from many people's kind of character rotation, but it doesn't seem like it's going to do so. Seems like
they're still quite strong.
Yeah, I think when this first rolled around, like before we actually had concrete information, it was just, I think Rob Garrett said last year that we're going to be looking at races. A lot of people, myself included, looked at the Argonian and the Red Guard and said, okay, they're going to take these two guys out behind the woodshed. And that hasn't happened.
Yeah,
I'm really happy with that. because a lot of this stuff has been brought up. There's a lot of stuff where races have actually been improved across the board. So
going through these, we got poison resist removed. And so health was 9%. Now it's 1K because they've moved that from percentage to flat. So that's probably gonna weigh a little on the tanky side, huh? Because it's what, lower than other
on
races
the top
here?
End, it's a bit of a reduction.
Mm-hmm.
On the lower end, it's not so much because healers tend to obviously get this passive. They have a lot less health than tanks traditionally, mm-hmm. so they're going to benefit from quite a hefty health bonus being 1K on top of what they've already got. Especially if you start adding trial buffs and stuff like that. It's the tanks that are going to still have a nice bonus, but it's going to be not as aggressive, if you know what I mean. It was quite a big bump up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. It's a great point.
Yeah, and well, in health, 9% was, I think that was tied for second highest with like the Nords or something.
Yeah, it was. Nord and High Elf were, Nord and Argonian were exactly the same.
Yeah, and now that's been pulled down a lot. That's the thing about this, and that was why I singled this one out. In most cases where there was a bonus of this size, like the 9% or the 10%, it got transferred over to 2,000. And in this case, there's actually a significant reduction. So a lot of times when we're looking at these things, it's like, okay, if you had a character that had about 20,000 health, the balance doesn't change. But in this case, in the Argonian, it's if you had more than 11,000, I think, health, then the balance doesn't change. So in most cases, you're actually going to see your health go down as an Argonian.
Oh, well... Oops, sorry, Argonians. We still love you. Don't worry.
It's still high, though.
We had people that
like
were afraid
really
that they were going to actually lose their swim passive. I saw a lot of fear for that. Like, please don't take away our ability to swim. Like, okay, priorities. At least you got them. That's what's key. Wood Elf. Stark, you want to read this through this one?
Yeah, so used to be they had a reduced detection radius on someone else identifying them. That's been removed, so they no longer have a stealth bonus. And instead, it increases their ability to detect targets in stealth. So this is, as far as I can tell, almost entirely PvP-based. I can't think of anything in PvP where this is relevant. They get an increased movement speed after dodge rolls, which is going to be nice, because as far as I can tell, that will stack with everything else.
It's flat, yeah, it will stack.
Yeah. But it's not going to let you go over the max movement cap, unfortunately. Nope. So it's nice. It's not great. On the other hand, and we were just talking about with the Argonian, where their max health was not, like they weren't getting a great conversion rate. The max stam conversion for the Wood Elves is fantastic because they're going from a 6% buff up to a full 2,000. So this is like if they'd already been getting plus 10% to their max stam.
Yeah, it's the same as Red Guard and Imperial now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really nice.
That's quite high.
Yeah.
Yeah, they seem like they're going to be a really fun race. I mean, if you're looking to roll something just different, you kind of unique in terms of mobility, that might be a really fun one to play with. Like, you're getting into Battlegrounds, something like that. I mean, it sounds... I don't know. I feel like that they're actually making these racial passives make the races really distinct in certain ways. Maybe more than before.
Bow-like as well, isn't it? Because,
yes, the bow one, yeah.
The hasty retreat bonus on the bow is if you dodge roll, you get major expedition for a few seconds. With this being a flat bonus, obviously they calculate a certain way, but they that would stack with it in essence.
Yeah, I think that's the point.
Which is
it's trying to amplify
kind of,
the bow.
Exactly, that's pushing you towards that passive, meaning that if you wanted to take advantage of it, all other major expedition bonuses aside from other abilities and skills and such, it's kind of saying, look, if you have the bow, the Wood Elf is really good at this. Mm-hmm. So it does make it kind of unique if you did it for that.
Yeah.
And the whole hunter passive, being able to find people in stealth, they're all centered around the Wood Elf being nimble, definitely having a bow, all that kind of stuff. So you can see where they're trying to push for that, which in lore essence is actually pretty accurate. So it's quite good.
Yeah, it's good to see them do that. It's good to see these kind of line up lore wise too, not just like leveling the playing field in any certain way. And I think that goes to be said with the Breton too, which is for people that know me, my favorite by far. And I'm very happy as a Breton healer to see these changes coming through. So they are gaining magicka recovery at the cost. At the same time, they took out some of our spell resistance. But as well, they've moved up our passive. So we get an increased cost discount for magicka abilities. That's up from 3% to 7%. So not only are we now recovering, I think the number was 100 for magicka recovery. So we're just a little weaker towards spells, but that's primarily cool with me as a healer. I mean, I shouldn't be tanking the spells directly anyway. What do you guys, do you have any thoughts on this Breton change here?
That's quite efficient.
Right?
7% is crazy.
I'm
it's really, really hot.
Very like excited it. To see his sustainability for these characters. And I'm not going to lie. I'm thinking ahead to the Necromancer, and Bretton Lore is really tied into it. So come on, Necromancer Healer. I'm very eager to see what sort of spells you can pump out. I have not heard anything really negative in the conversations going around on social media about the Brett and everyone. And in fact, I can't remember who it was today. Someone posted a picture of a poll on the forum showing like the races that had the most, angst towards right now. And the Bretton came in very least with like only 1% animosity towards them. So I'm like, Cool. Good time. Like to
they kept the magic bonus too, didn't they? They kept
the magic bonus. That was went from 10% to 2,000, so that's nice and clean.
No spell damage increase, but you get reduction to cost increase instead.
Yep, and that cost discount's nice too, because that's going to come in line with 7 pieces of light now, where it was in line with I think 3 pieces before. So that's a nice increase. It's going to sting a little bit that the spell resist is going down, because I was using the race for that on a number of characters, but life goes on. It's still a really solid choice.
If you stack that with the Dragon Knight, however, your spell.
Oh yeah, no. The Dragon Knight and the Templar are both disgusting. Yeah.
Especially Rune Focus, where you get 50% increase on.
Yep.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys how bad of a... Because I'm bad with my resists. Like, I don't understand resists as well. So, I mean, that's a... What number are we looking at there? 1,700 drop in that number, looks like, approximately?
If you say 1,700, that is... Got Cookout in front of me. 2.5% resistance is-ish.
Yeah.
So, it's not that much of a drop, to be fair.
Okay.
Like, you'll notice it. You'll feel it, but you'll feel it more than you'll actually notice it, because you'll be aware that it's there and you're like, oh God, why? But it's
you got 3.5% now instead of 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I have enough magic of return to heal up that damage. We'll be fine. Our next one here on the list has probably produced, I'd say, the most salt on the internet so far.
It's funny because it's unnecessary salt. I really like this.
This is one of the reasons I like the passives, because as long as this comes through to live, this is exactly what balance means.
Yeah, I love this.
Let's hear it, Stark. Yeah. You want to do it?
Go for it.
Okay, so with lore throughout the series, the Dark Elves always had this sort of weird hybrid between magic and non-magic skills. Like, they've got the spell sort thing going on. And that, I've actually checked, that goes all the way back to Arena. Mm-hmm. And we finally get that in ESO. So up to this point, they've had bonuses to both stat pools. They get stam, they get magicka, they get some health too. But then they've had a bonus specifically to fire, and then that was later revised so that was fire with a much smaller bonus to lightning and ice. But now it's just going to a flat plus 258 weapon and spell damage to both pools. And I really like that, because it's like, this opens up the options on what you can do with a dark elf a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's like having they stack anyway, but it's like having a major built in. Before, where you had 7% increase to flame, which was really high, and then the 2% for other elements, you were kind of pigeonholed into flame or don't bother because you're losing too much damage, which wasn't massive, but it was basically looked at upon that. With this being a flat spell damage bonus, every single element, fire, ice, lightning, and magic damage, is all equal now, or capable of being equal. And then the same on the other side, on the stamina side of things as well. You're not restricted to physical or poison or anything like that. It's weapon damage across the board. So any physical abilities you use, again, can be equally utilized. So it's really good balance for both sides of the coin.
Yeah.
I like it. I mean, yeah, I don't... As a guy that doesn't play Dark Elves, I don't know exactly... why, but I know that they're trying to all leave it, and I saw in some of the DPS kind of readouts that people were posting that they're not behind by much at all in terms of output.
No, they're really not.
Well, this goes back to the comment I made earlier where it's like, and this is more perception than reality, but a lot of players looking at Dark Elf and feeling like if you're running something other than a Nightblade or a Dragon Knight, that you're being punished because you get this specific elemental bonus. And what happens if you're running any other element? So I think that just even combating that perception, this is a really nice change. Because it's just going to be like, look at this and decide what you want to do with it later. There's another one like that that's coming up that I'm also really happy with, and it's cost some salt. So we'll get there eventually.
Salty.
The same as what you've touched on from a lore perspective as well. Higher, let's go back into some of the previous one-player versions of the game. When you pick your race and you have like bonuses to classes or races, High Elf is renowned for having high magic and all that kind of stuff and being kind of the wielder of magic. The Dark Elf has always been renowned for having a resistance to fire type abilities. whereas not being quite as strong magically as a High Elf. Even though they're really, really close in terms of their actual output now from multiple tests, they are still following those rules that they were initially kind of remembered for in previous games and stuff like that. So I think they've stuck to it really, really well, especially with the burn and status effect immunity. They've still kept that in there, which is really nice.
Next up, we're looking at one of my personal favorites, the Imperial, and they got some rework done to Red Diamond. So I was kind of looking over here what it was previously. So as we know, Red Diamond right now, it's a 10% chance on melee attack to heal for 6% max health, and that is switching over to when you deal direct damage, you have a 15% chance to heal for 1,750.
Direct damage. Listen carefully.
Yep. Yes. So that's
massive difference.
That's so nice. Very. So what? It was melee before. So that excluded things like bows, right? Is that
no bows, no staves, direct? No light attacks from range, no nothing.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, no.
And the direct damage can come from abilities as well, not just weapons.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds
so now
big.
You can do this with a lot of different sources. You can do it at range. You can do it on a mag character.
Yep.
Also, if you're a DPS, that's now a larger heal than it would have been before.
Good point. Correct. Great
that
point.
That is true.
And so it also looks like they get a reduced cost to block and bash abilities by 5%. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming.
Yes, which is really
that's
nice.
Also really nice.
Trying to push them a little bit more towards the viable. I don't want to say they weren't viable before, but I think they're trying to entice the tankiness.
They were viable tanks, but they were very flat resource bonuses rather than any unique tank passive. So like the Nord had a reduction to damage incoming and stuff like that, and the Imperial was more just flat high resources, so you can get hit for longer or you could block for longer and stuff like that. It was never actually any mitigated effects to that particular role, but it was still worked very, very well. But being able to have block and bash reduction, that does cater for all types of play, because everybody does it, but definitely towards a tank, stack them with other bonuses of the same type. It's really quite nice.
Very cool.
So I like that they've added that in there.
Now, with Red Diamond, I don't know if you... I'm assuming you two saw this because you guys are very in tune with these sort of changes, but I saw something with Red Diamond proccing what looked like an excessive amount on the PTS. And when I say excessive, I mean very excessive. Have we seen any changes or anything with that yet? Any hot fixes?
I think they're going for a fix.
I'm hoping it's just a cooldown limit on it, because that's all it needs. Yeah. It's slowed down. Because right now they switched... Because I think right now in live also the normal version of Red Diamond doesn't have a cooldown reduction, but because it's very limited proc circumstances, it's hard to get that thing just rolling and rolling and rolling. So kicking that over,
it's a global cooldown of your light attacks or heavy attacks, which is basically separating at the moment. But on PTS, since there's no cooldown, you could probably fire off quite a lot of direct damage at once. It can over proc.
It should be procking off of caltrops, unless I'm mistaken. So it's like and endless hail. So it's like, that would be nuts.
Just saying, we could keep it as is on the PTS and we all just roll Imperials and then we just all win. That could be an option, Zoss, please. No. So they changed a couple other things with the Imperial too. So Tough, we used to be a 12% max health. That's now doing a max health of 2,000. Is that seem pretty good too? I mean... Mm-hmm. That seems pretty average.
It's going to calculate to about 18. You get the same bonus from it now that you would have had at about, I think, 18K before. Someplace around 2,000. That stayed this. So that's usually the cutoff point. Like, if the old pool is at 2,000, your buff value isn't going to change.
Makes sense.
On a DPS, you use a DPS Imperial as well, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So you would have also noticed that, the current passive in play, if you've got 16K health from using 7 medium on Imperial, you've actually got 18.
Yep.
And with it being a 2K bonus instead, that's still the same.
Yep. It's going to be exactly the same. The other one, actually, I tend to run a little higher on my health because I do put some points in health on my mediums. But still, the other one here is, so Stam and the mag pools, when it's like the plus 10% changes, like it's about 20K. The other one is, and I said this earlier, I didn't point it out earlier, but the Red Diamond, the heal is calculated at about for what a 30K character would get right now. So you're going to get less of a heal as a tank. You're going to get more as a heal as DPS. I didn't bother expressing that number earlier, but it's there.
Ooh, I'm excited. I'm very excited. I don't know. I usually roll any Stam characters as an Imperial, so I'm very, that's going to be cool. Looking forward to it. Now, next one up on our list has a lot of people excited. If you want to go into this one, Stark, the Khajiit.
Yeah, the short answer is this is a lot like the Dark Elf. It's now going to be kind of resource agnostic. One of the big things is it's now getting all stats up. I don't think anybody else just flat gets all stats up on a single passive. And it's going to have the weapon crit now applying to spell crit as well. So that's going to be huge for a lot of different build setups.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of people out there that have like Magicka Khajiits right now that they don't mm-hmm. have any passives that are helping them, right? Everything's basically sneaky stam focused. So now to actually get a nod in their direction, they're very happy. And a well-timed change for that too, especially as we're rolling into Elsewhere, and I'm sure we're going to see more Khajiits on the server than probably ever before. So
I think this is in the same area as the Dark Elf. I mean, the fact that they've gone full out balance to any choice you want to make. And you can still take a race and be viable in pretty much every area. You can heal off this, you can go stand DPS, you can go mag DPS, you can go hybrid, you can go tank, you can do pretty much everything anyway, but this now supports those choices.
Love it.
Without a flat increase, instead you've got the chance for crit, which is, it was only one-sided before, and now it's kind of whatever you want to do with it, which is really, really cool, especially alongside the Dark Elf. Those two have, in my opinion, got some of the best balance changes.
There is one goofy thing here, and this is just from practice with a Bosmer on live. If you're wearing full meter, because the stealth bonus has gone from 3 meters detect mm-hmm. radius reduction to 5 meters. And I used to run a Bosmer with Nightmother's Embrace, which had the same basic effect. Like it took the 3 meter reduction on the Wood Elf and added another 2 meters to it, so 5 meters down. A 5 meter reduction in full medium armor is bonkers.
Yes.
You can hug people and they don't know you're there.
I love it.
Like it's. I don't even want to know what happens if you start putting Nightmother's Embrace or if you put Night Terror on that, because it's going to be like, can you be seen at all?
Ooh.
It's like Ghost Khajiit. They go everywhere.
People are into that. They love them for their sneaky. The Nord here, this one really, really interests me, especially looking ahead to that Necromancer and his Bone Colossus thing. So, big change is to Stalwart, which previously, or currently, I should say, is 6% max stamina and 20% health recovery. That is changing to increases your max stamina by 1,500, and when you take damage, you gain 5 ultimate. That will happen once every 10 seconds. That seems massively awesome.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Really good. I mean,
you start stacking ultimate sets and you take advantage of your passive ultimate gain, which is 3 a second for 8 seconds. And then, of course, your minor heroism and major heroism, if you're taking advantage of those, and you start collectively stacking it all together and then use cheap ultimates, that's actually quite day.
Yeah. This is also kind of bonkers for a Dragon Knight, because mm-hmm. this is just passively ticking towards being able to detonate for more resources.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Wow.
I love this from a lore perspective, by the way.
Oh, why is that?
Because we get the whole thing with the Nords where it's like, okay, they've got all the dragon stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, wait, yeah, this. Like, because we don't actually have shouts, but when you're looking at ultimates, especially coming when you came right over from Skyrim, uh-huh. it's hard not to look at that as the replacement for the shouts power system from Skyrim. Oh, and it's like, okay, Nords, yes, of course, they get to yell at people more often. I like that.
Oh yeah, being the only race as well with an increase to base ulti regen as such is actually quite nice. Yeah. The resistance is a different way of doing it. I mean, you are losing 6%, which was a stacking bonus that could go on top of your resistance. Your resistance is capped at 50%. Then you can use mitigation effects, which they calculate multiplicatively, so you will get a diminished return the more you stack up. But it did still stack regardless. Now that won't, because it's a physical and spell resistance stat, which can only, of course, again, go to 50%, and anything else is just spare change. But with you having that flat resistances on your race as a passive, that now leaves you a lot more options for tanking sets and stuff like that if you really wanted to, in one respect, because you don't have to cap out with your gear and buffs anymore, because you'll be able to easily do it from this, which means you can wear possibly less tanky sets and more utility types. At the same time, if you were to utilize this as a DPS, not only have you got high ulti regen, a decent amount of stamina, good survivability with your health, but you also have massive resist as well. It's actually really, really solid change. It's quite nice.
I'm loving the Nord. I've only got one right now, but this is nice.
Yeah, I'm very happy to hear it from a player interest standpoint. You know, when I got into ESO, people were really down on the Nord. I mean, I don't see that many of them out there in the world as is. And to see a lot of people gaining interest in them, it feels good. It feels like we're gaining a class back into the rotation.
Yeah.
I feel it's missing a little bit of magical kind of push, but the rest of it is pretty solid.
That's a great point. And when, like I said, I wonder if some of this push towards the ultimate gen, I feel like really that's going to interest a lot more people time to the Necromancer if, you know, they're trying to keep into that Bone Colossus. I say if because we don't have details, but if that's the case, I see a lot of people taking interest in the Nord to try and stay in that form more often. So
it also fits with the Nord Werewolf approach. Like if you're going back for that theme, that's always fun.
That's a great point, too. Didn't even think of that. Stark, would you like to read us through the orc changes?
The big one here is just it's changed from dealing damage with a weapon ability, healing and restoring stam. That's actually pretty significant. It's a small bonus, as I recall. I didn't record the number on the show notes, unfortunately. Yeah, but it's still nice that it's just you deal damage with it, you'll get both the resource back and you'll get some heals. So that's a nice identity for them. And then also they had a melee damage bonus, which is now just a flat weapon damage increase, the same as what we see with the high elf and the dark elf. So that's also a nice change because it's again, not having to explain to somebody, no, you need to actually take this character into melee. If you want to do a bow ganger with an arc, that's now legitimately an option.
Yeah, it's a bit of a buff in some respects because instead of just your lights or heavies and melee type abilities being affected, your skills will be affected as well based on the ones that scale off weapon damage full stop. Yeah. So it's a bit of an increase. It's actually really, really solid as well. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, I'm not worrying about orc mages in PvP because they're going to be getting their stam back.
Yes, which means they can break out of CC more often, which is nasty. I'd like to see, again, something magic based on the orc because let's face it, we do see in lore, you do see magical orcs as shaman type. So I'd like to see something to that respect, but their whole kind of berserker type attitude, like getting in, being tough, smacking stuff and just staying in the fight for longer. The fact that they get health back and they get stamina back for just continuing to hit is actually, again, on a lore perspective, quite a good addition or change to the orc. It's very roleplay-esque, if you like, with them kind of staying in there and just getting stuff back all the time. It's really, really solid. The 4-second cooldown is not that bad either. It sounds like a small change being 380 every 4 seconds, but it does actually make quite a significant difference.
Yeah, I think that's going to be very interesting. Anyway. I guess I haven't even heard too much. The orc is one of those classes I don't really actually hear too much about, nor do I see a ton of them out there. So I wonder if this creates a change. I mean, at least not in my space. I usually am not huge PvPer guy, and I think that's traditionally maybe where they've had more usefulness in the past.
Yeah, well,
they kept the heat and received as well, though, didn't they? They kept
the heat and received. That didn't change.
No, so they can take bigger heals.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
They're really good. Yeah, they're going to be a really good tank pick after this. Mm-hmm. Also, because dealing damage restores stam with a weapon ability, that's going to include pierce. Yes. So you taunt them, you heal, you get some resources back, and then it's going to be a good tank pick still.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Because I don't know if I know many orc tanks. Well, okay. I mean, Zai, we don't get to play enough. I'm sorry. I don't see a lot of them, though, out there. I mean, I've seen some interesting combinations, but I don't think I know any orc tanks myself.
There are a few Imperials, but they're normally Nord or Argonian.
Yeah.
Mostly.
I want to say at least two of the tanks I've rolled with on a regular basis are Argonian. So.
Yeah,
the Argonians are really preferential at the moment for tanking. Like that has been the go-to pick for a while for a lot of people.
I'm all about this. I'm all about more races being spread into different areas. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what we want, right? We want a plethora of all these different races out there so we can just have a more, I don't know, more interesting fantasy world, not just like everyone fitting into two specific races or something like that for a role. So this is really exciting. We're getting into one. The last one here will be the Red Guard. Now, this is currently the this is definitely the go-to for Stam builds. Everyone always recommends Redguard. So large change here being that they're losing their stamina recovery from exhilaration, which I guess is changing over to martial training, which will reduce the cost of weapon abilities by 8%. So they're losing a recovery but gaining a cost reduction. How's that shaping up for people?
Doug, you go first, then I'm going to tell you how to break it.
Okay, Starkey.
Okay, on its own, the reduction to weapon cost, weapon ability cost, is nice. Like if that was the end of the story with these guys, that was their signature thing, I'd be really happy. And I'd say that because, again, as with the high elf, your weapon, you can be resource agnostic, so you could potentially do a Red Guard Mage, which is a thing, and you'd get reduced cost on your casting. And for straight up weapon abilities, this is great, because again, there's a lot in lore with the Red Guards as weapon masters. I like that. And then they changed the Stam Return passive. So that went from melee only to direct damage, which is, we've seen that on a lot of these. And again, on the whole, it's a really good change. And the Stam Return has been increased from, I believe it's 798 to 950.
Yeah, it looks 792, really close.
Yeah, that, and this is the one that was like the biggest question for me, like just going into this ahead of time, because that feels excessive to me, but I don't have a lot of experience with these guys as they exist on live, and it feels like there's no end to sustain.
Correct, to some extent. Excuse me. Basically, as far as balance changes go, up until this particular race, everything is fairly in line with what we'd expect. And in terms of diversity for builds and also lore following as well. The Red Guard, as you've said already, the weapons expert, perfect, makes sense. All weapon abilities are 8% reduced. So you could roll a magic character. You could get an advantage to reduction to cost for resto staves and magic destruction staff abilities and stuff like that. So that does allow diversity. However, the Stam Return on direct damage, although that's actually a really good bonus, being that you can use it from a bow ability or even mag abilities as well. So you're using crush range and then you can get your resources back. You can do more blocks and dodge rolls and stuff, especially in PvP. That's actually a good magical choice. The amount that you get back at the same time as having weapon ability reduction is a little bit high. The reason being, if you, for example, I'm going to use the Dragon Knight as an example to break it. 950 stamina back once every 5 seconds if you're doing direct damage. The Dragon Knight, if you're using poison damage, which you will, because they excel at them, if you apply a poison status effect, which you can do by guaranteed if you hit for lethal hour, not necessarily saying that you would, but you can, you get 500 stamina back once every 5 seconds. So that pushes this up to 1,450 stamina back every 5 seconds, and your weapon abilities, which are normally at least 50% of your overall rotation for most setups, are all reduced by 8%. It stacks with VO if you ever needed to use it, which you probably wouldn't, but you could. And poison abilities for the Dragon Knight, Lethal Arrow, Flame Breath, Noxious Breath, Venom Claw, and Poison Injection. Now, they're the most commonly used ones on a Dragon Knight in terms of the rotations, whether you're long range or close range. But if you use Poison Injection as an example, that is a weapon ability, which gets reduction to cost. Mm-hmm. But it's poison also, which gets a further 25% reduction to cost on the Dragon Knight.
Wow.
So your recovery is through the roof. Your first hit on poison injection is direct damage, so you get your your 950 back. If it procs a poison status effect, you get 500 back again, plus it's cheap as hell. That's just one skill, but then you use snipe and stuff like that, you can get it down so low, and then you stack it with medium armor passives, which is reduction to cost and all that good stuff as well. Again, it goes up and up and up, and you can borderline spam. Does it make any difference in terms of overall DPS and actual numbers that you can put out? If you alter your rotation for this and do more light attacks, and then other races you do more heavy attacks, no, it's very, very close. But the ability to permanently spam stuff without running out of juice is a little too high, and this may be broken in several different areas in the game to some extent. I think it's a little bit much. One more thing, and you're going to hate it. This also counts as ultimates. Weapon ability ultimates do count. Yeah. Oh, I tested this with a sorcerer, which gets a 15% reduction to ultimate cost. 8% reduction to ultimate cost for the weapon abilities with the Red Guard. Then you put on the Akaviri Dragon, which is 15% reduction. You put on Potentates, which is a 10% reduction. And then you put on Bloodspawn, which gives you 14 ultimate every 6 seconds if you're lucky, on top of your passive regen. And if you're using Invigorate and Drain, you can actually get, just with a little combination like that, 98 ultimate every 8 seconds, if you're lucky. And your Sword and Board ultimate will cost you 83. And that lasts 7 seconds. You can build a new Sword and Board ulti during the permablock Sword and Board ulti.
It's, oh.
And if you're doing direct damage as well at the same time, just a light attack here, there, anywhere, 950 back. It's nuts. I mean, obviously different races and different classes make different cakes come out, let's say, but that's the sort of thing that you're looking at. So I think some of this cannot necessarily be abused. It's not really the word I want to use for it, but there would be some clever combinations that come out that can really take advantage of this to push it as more of a choice or a favorite than the others. So I think they may want to bring it back a little bit. Still very, very good for DPS, still stamina-based, still weapon-based, as it should be. But I think that recovery and reduction, I think you either need one or the other, or bring one of them down a bit.
Yeah.
They are so strong.
I was going to say, I do actually like the idea of the discount applying to ultimates as well, simply because, and then you make that example and it's like, well, I'm going to eat my words, but
155 for a death royalty.
Yeah, no, it's nice though, because if you're actually like, if you're going to make your racial choice, you know, if you're going to take a Red Guard specifically to reduce the cost of your death royal, good. Like that's actually a use for it. I like that.
But
the weapon alts do tend to be kind of expensive.
Depends what they're on. If it's on a DK, it can be, because you don't get a-
yeah.
But yeah, the stam, I mean, if you're going to go with that reduction and that be kind of their thing, sure, go for it. But the recovery at the same time, or the return from direct damage, if you stack that with a DK or even have it on its own, it's very, very high.
Yeah. Well, that's the, what's weird about to me about this is that's the thing they went out of their way to get rid of after, or get rid of with Morrowind. Mm-hmm. So it's still a little strange to see this here.
Yeah. I mean, there are choices in the game, and I know like a lot of people don't like putting on heavy attacks, but that's how the game's designed. That does give you resources back. It is something that you should utilize if you have to. The Red Guard can give you kind of room to spam buttons really, really fast if you want to, but it defeats the object of having to find your own ways to sustain. You can go full flat damage and full burst and not run out. Wow. Instead of having the options in game where you get two choices. You either, you go full flat, and then you utilize your own resource return with heavies or gear or whatever you've got. Or you go full burst and you drop some of your flat and increase your recovery with your sets and bonuses and foods and all that kind of stuff. You've got choices for glyphs and food and everything. This negates that. This allows you to go full out, infinite recovery, and get as much damage as everybody else at the same time in that respect. So I think, yeah, I've already said it, but I think I should pull this back a little bit and possibly allow for a bit more choice with it, because I think it is a little pigeonholy if someone wants to have that kind of play style. It doesn't allow you to then go, do I need recovery glyphs? No, of course you don't. You're not going to use that.
Yeah. It seems to me a little odd also, like in context, because we got the High Elves where they specifically went to, they've got it now, have an agnostic resource return setup.
Yeah.
Where it'll pick between the two. And it seems weird that they did not apply that same system to the Red Guard.
Well, this is also going to work for that, isn't it? So this, I mean, this is 950. That is 575 if you use a class ability, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is class damage of any kind.
Oh yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I was thinking of like, if that was specifically only on weapon damage returns.
Yeah, that would be different, but yeah, this is direct. So again, I mean, they've given a resource return for one race, which is really nice. And then they've just completely blown out of the water for the other, if you go on stamina anyway.
Mm, yeah. Mm.
And this will work for, that's one thing I haven't tried. I'll admit if I haven't tried anything. If this works with Bash.
Oh.
Ball holding block.
Oh man.
Wow.
Ball having Venom Claw running, which will just take poison passives.
Huh.
Yeah, we've got another Argonian.
Yep.
Never gonna run out of juice.
We're back to the old days of the permablock tanks.
Yes. And they're trying
to escape. If that's true, if that's accurate, it's not gonna last long.
Yeah, that's the one thing I haven't actually tried, but I will.
I hear old tales of the perma block tanks, and nothing good from those days. And
there's nothing really interesting about those days. It was you'd go out there, you'd hold right click, and you just sit there.
Ugh. Yeah.
3 weeks later, the boss dies, and you're like, okay, now I'll go to the next one, do the same thing.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. All gameplay removed, basically. Got it.
Yeah.
So with all of these passives being covered, and we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but who are big standouts? The ones that have received probably the most criticism sound like the Argonian, the Dunmer, and I think, Sark, did you throw in the Red Guard to this list?
I threw in the Red Guard on this. Yeah, because for the reasons we just covered.
Yeah. So I think we kind of talked about this before, but it was, you know, it's a lot of excessive salt. These things are not settled as of yet, so we're probably going to see some tweaks, especially to some of them. We're really hoping for tweaks. So just keep that in mind when you're listening to this episode. There may have been last minute edits here and there, but these are our kind of predictions of how this is going to work. And with that being said, I want to kind of toss it to you two. What races do you think we're going to see more of out in the world?
Well, you've still got 3 weeks, I think, of PTS, so there could be some dramatic changes. This is not set in stone, so we don't necessarily know. But looking at them at the moment, I mean, it stands to reason that people are going to go mental over Red Guard for stamina. Yeah. Breton for healers is still going to be just as popular with these changes in mind. High Elf would still be very popular for magic. Although Dark Elf is a very, very good contender for both sides, Magic and Stam. And Khajiit now being a choice for Magicka, even though all the other bonuses for all the other races are solid in that respect, I think the Khajiit we might see a lot more of Magic side because you can now utilize it. So high crit builds, for example, for Nightblades and Templars and stuff like that, taking advantage of their 10% increase to crit damage, I think you're going to see a lot more Khajiit than ready. I think above all the races, I think we're going to see a lot more Khajiit. Yeah.
I think we're going to see some more Nords too, simply because region is, also, I mean, we do see some already just from people go out there and they're like, I want to do a tank, so I'll do this guy because he looks like a beefsteak. So yeah, that's that works. But I think we're going to see some more of those on the alt gen also, because that's kind of unique. Like that.
Yeah, I think those are all very solid. I'm thinking I hit and miss on if I run into Imperials. I think you guys kind of sounded very, very amped on those changes that are coming through
them. The thing about the Imperials is they're very rare. Like even on the front end of it's a very good race pick, and this is actually making an even better choice. I think it's in line. I don't think it's overpowered, but it even with that, because it's pay gated, that's still one of the kill achievements I've never gotten in PvP.
Because
they're very rare to run into simply because you have to go out and spend extra money to play one.
I always wonder if they're, and I believe it, you have more statistical in that saying than I do, but I always wondered if I just didn't notice because admittedly, you know, they're not a race that has a tail, for example, or they're not a different color. You know, they're the same as Bretons for the most part. You couldn't really tell them apart in the battlefield. So I wasn't sure. And sometimes I'll get surprised by what's actually out there. But yeah, I think you're right. I think the pay gate scares some people off, but I wonder, it really sounds enticing and it does feel like, well, we know with people like Casual Ranger, there's a very deep love for the Imperial out there. So I'm really hoping we see a couple more of them become tanks.
We might see a few more, especially with Abin the Farn raising his head again.
Good point. I mean, we got that whole, Imperial expedition into Elsewhere happening. So that's going to be very interesting.
It's kind of an amusing little bit of trivia about the Imperials also. You mentioned the Bretons, but for the players, the Imperials and the Bretons share their voice sets.
True.
So they sound identical because it's the exact same voice files.
And they share the same furniture skin. They share maybe too much at times.
You can tell them apart if you're actually looking at the player's face. But yeah, if it's just, oh, hey, there's a person over there. Yeah, good luck.
You may have seen, I made a Breton look exactly like an Imperial. Like, I can't tell the two apart in my own character creation screen. And I'm just like, I love them both, so might as well. Do you think we're going to see less of any of these now? Like, do you really think some of that Dunmer spite or salt's going to sink in and people are going to abandon ship?
I think you may see less Dark Elf Mag DKs just based on salt, not based on facts.
Right. Because that's big. I mean, perception's a large part of it. Facts come second to perspective and all of that. So, okay. Stark, are you thinking of anything that's going to get kind of left in the cold now?
No, I think the big one's going to be that. For gankers, we're going to see a large shift from the Wood Elves to the boss, or sorry, from the Wood Elves to the Khajiit. Because again, like they lost the stealth detection, but they gained the stealth detection passive, but they lost their stealth passive. So that's going to sting a little bit for me too. But I think that that transition over is going to happen if people are actually changing the race.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see this. So, and the final thoughts, you guys, are, is anyone changing races here? Anyone feeling the urge?
Not yet, not until it's live.
There you go. No. I don't think so. I don't think it's worth it. Like we were saying at the very kind of early stages of this episode, best is more suited to your skill set. You know, whatever you personally as a human are good at doing, you can find that, you can play it up. These, just because your race gets a change does not mean it's going to destroy what you were doing before. You might have to play a little bit different, but not much.
Well, I think that's also one of the things that they are actually making a fairly significant change on, because before there was the structure where if you were out of focus, you'd actually have to, you would have to work harder to put stuff together, or you'd have to work around it. And because they're moving to flat bonuses, a lot of that stuff's actually starting to go away.
Yeah. It's a great point.
Yeah, it's balanced out quite well across the board, regardless of what race and role you pick in terms of combination. You can do pretty much the same across the board in some respects. Some are pushing a little bit more one way than the other, but that's kind of the idea as far as role, as far as lore is concerned. They do have their bonuses, but they're not so far pushed to one way that you can't use something else.
Yeah.
Well said. Well, Zai, thank you so much for coming on to this episode. It was a blast having you here. Great to have an extra voice in the show to kind of lend some insight and some hard tested fact. The fact that you've been playing around with us for a while. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Please tell the folks out there where they can find you across the internet, because you're a major content creator.
I had to write this down because I would forget. YouTube, if you go to /designerdgaming, you'll find my YouTube channel there. The Dungeon Guides, it's an All About Mechanics series where all the dungeon guides are, so from beginning to end, from the first dungeon you ever encounter all the way up to DLC, and my builds are. Then there's Twitch, which is /Zynode. There is Facebook, which is /Zynode Gaming. Twitter, /Zynode again. Patreon's /Zynode. There's a pattern here. And then ZynodeGaming.com, where all the written guides are as well.
Fantastic. We'll throw your notes into the show description on YouTube.
Awesome.
And
for the
podcast here. People can get that. Thank you again so much for coming on. Stark, thank you as always for sharing your insight. We will be back here next week. So next Sunday, Stark and I are coming back together. We are finishing our run through of the new content, because I think last week you and I really focused heavily on the Necromancer and what that kind of looked like in preview. But I think we had some miscellaneous stuff from throughout the year we wanted to kind of touch on and let you guys know what's coming. So and if you want to talk to us in the meantime, I'm over on Twitch, twitch.tv/Kyle Dempster Studios. Stark will often be there hanging out in chat. I'm over on Twitter /Kyle Dempster STU. Stark, you're at twitter.com/MichaelJSchwartz. And if you guys need to send an email or anything like that, KyleDempsterStudios@gmail.com. All that information will be in the show notes for you below. Until next time, everybody, have a great week exploring Tamriel. Bye-bye.
Take care.